The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice, and all economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax, and penalties may be imposed on such persons, and each listener should seek advice from their own tax advisor, legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us. I got a great guest tonight, Rodney Johnson. He is the senior editor of Economy and Markets. He's with the Dent Research Organization. He usually comes on a couple times a year, kind of puts things in perspective for us. So we'll have Rodney on in just a few minutes. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Lance Like of the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my buddy Lance at Like Law Group, 323-8300. Saw here the average national price of gasoline was $1.70 back on Friday, the 26th of February. 2 years ago, the average gasoline price was actually $3.43, about a 50% drop from 2 years ago. That comes from AAA. And then I saw GasBuddy. They predict that gas prices will peak at an average of $2.63 this May, and then they're going to drift a little bit lower to $2.46 and then get back down to around $2 a gallon before the end of the year. From investment news, with a little juice back in the stock market, the Fed rate hike seems to be moving back to center stage. Say what? We're back talking about the Fed rate hike again. Rodney will clear that up for sure. Latest update on bankruptcy limit changes. The IRA, federal IRA protection from bankruptcy, has now risen up to $1.283 million. So people get this kind of confused. They talk about it being creditor protected. IRAs, retirement accounts, are protected from bankruptcy proceedings, not just creditor proceedings. And then finally, I had one more piece here. Workers and employers should be forced to save more money under a new retirement proposal. I've been talking about this for a long time. I had an opportunity to talk with a Rotary Club, and this is a big passion of mine. We're going to have to become more paternalistic when it comes to saving. But unfortunately, this new proposal only forces people to save 3% in the world where there are no pensions and Social Security is under question. You're on your own when it comes to this retirement. 3% is not going to get you there. So I'm the proponent of putting in 3%, 5%, 10%, and then auto increases, make people opt out of it because, again, they won't do it. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we'll be joined live by Rodney Johnson, the senior editor of Economy and Markets. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we expected a decent jobs number. We got an okay one. Oil has steadily increased in price. Market seems to be reacting pretty good. And with a little juice back in the market, the Fed rate hike seems to be moving back to center stage. Joining us now live on the telephone is Rodney Johnson, the editor, senior editor of Economy and Markets. Puts out a lot of information that you can follow as well. We'll put you in contact with their group if you're of interest. And Rodney, appreciate you taking the time to call in. We know that you're a busy, busy guy, but this market started off the year kind of with a thud, to say the least, and then we've seen some of these numbers come out in the market and the sentiment kind of change recently. And I don't really know what's going on, so that's why you're here to help explain it all.
Well, perfect.
Yeah, a lot of pressure.
I had the same thing, right? Somebody asked me back in the middle of the holiday season, so mid-November, what my thought was. And I said, well, I think people are going to try and push this one in the fall or in the holiday season, but it's not going to feel good. And when we get earnings, everything's going to puke because companies are not earning a lot of money. As a matter of fact, earnings are lower for the last three quarters. And then the wheels are going to come off. We'll get a little bit of a rebound, but it won't last. And we're in the rebound part of that long trend. And people want it to go up. I mean, a falling market serves very few people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you said you want everybody to have a retirement account. You want it to be 10%, not 3%, automatic step up. You've got to opt out, and you can only do it with, you know, a covenant signed in blood. And the whole notion is you want to build wealth. And so people are looking for a reason to be positive here instead of scared and running. They got a little bit. Some economic numbers were a little better. They weren't a lot better. Oddly, earlier this week, there's, you know, technical number of the Institute of Supply Management's manufacturing number. It was a little less weak than expected, but it still showed contraction. And that's when the market ran up like crazy on Tuesday. That and oil going up to $35 a barrel. And you just got to kind of say that out loud to yourself. Oil is 35. Therefore, things are wonderful in the oil patch. It just it doesn't make a complete sentence because the shale oil producers need about 45, 50 bucks a barrel for things to be good. And 35 is a long way out. So I get the bounce. I see it. People breathed a sigh of relief. I think it's going to be short-lived. I think we got a lot of volatility in front of us, David.
Well, like you said, the next quarter earnings will be the telltale sign, I think, as far as how this thing gets underpinned or the rug pulled out from underneath it. Hey, let's talk about inflation, because obviously you guys have been talking about low inflation, possibly even deflation for a long time. You've been spot on when it comes to that globally. But the CPI, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, came out at 2.2%. Like you said, manufacturing still contracting, spending on some big ticket items still pretty strong. So when you're the average guy out there, or even the average investment person kind of looking at this, it does give you some pause, and it does confuse you slightly on why things are reacting the way that they react, Rodney.
Well, and CPI has to be seen in a longer piece. CPI for all of the past year was zero, right? It was zero. And it was zero because oil dropped like a rock. But I imagine everybody listening, I certainly know you and I, feel inflation, and it's called my health care insurance.
Yes.
And it has been just the bane of my existence. Mine went up 32% this year over last year. And so that hurts. And some other things that I have to do went up in price, like my homeowner's insurance a little bit, this and that. Some goods go down. You know, I can buy a much cheaper television. I can buy a much cheaper computer. These things have become throwaways. And oil dropping so far did give us all more money in our pocket over the last year. And if you can think of it, oil dropping so far for so long stopped. And it actually started moving up. And so we're not going to get the benefit that we had of oil dropping, pulling down inflation. We're instead going to have it probably going up a little bit, and showing some reflation on that, along with the other things. And so in the longer stream, prices are still low. We're just bounding back a little bit from what were very low prices on items.
Rodney was on the show back in January 15, again in July of 15, and here we are in March of 16, about every 6 months or so. And I actually went back and pulled the outline, Rodney, and listened to a little bit of the show when you were on last time. And we had talked off the air, too, but about how low oil prices could go, because back in January 15, most people were saying, wow, this is as low as it's going to go, and we can see it going to 80 by the end of the year. And you had a little different twist on that, and you said, you know what, this thing could continue to go lower, and it probably will, and here are the reasons why. We talked about China. I mean, you were spot on a year ago, a year and 3 months ago, on what would likely be the scenario. When you look at things today, and when we talk about oil in particular, where do you see this thing headed? Because the arrows still aren't necessarily pointing up on this thing. Demand's still globally not really there. The dollar strengthening. Obviously, if production starts to go down here domestically, that might help a little bit. But what do you think about oil?
I think there's two things going on. As Americans, we tend to be very country-centric. We tend to look at what happens here, and we think that's, you know, center of the world. And in some ways it is. We're big, we're powerful, we're rich, but we're not everything. The shale producers are out there, and they got very efficient. As the price of oil fell, they found better and better ways to do what they do. But you still got to do the shale drilling, which is the expensive part. Once you've drilled the hole and you've proven it and it's running, that's the money part. And so you want to keep everything running as much as you can. That keeps the supply high. That keeps prices low. Well, there aren't a lot of new oil wells being drilled in the United States. As a matter of fact, the rig count is down by two-thirds. I mean, from 1,800 down to, I think, 580 or 600, somewhere in there. Well, I think we'll get the next number tomorrow. But the point is, we haven't drilled many wells, and that's been weighing on a lot of manufacturing, this, that, and the other. Oil companies are laying people off. They're going bankrupt. All those things are happening. And so the lack of new supply from the U.S. and even falling production from the U.S. will help oil come back a little bit, but it's kind of self-defeating. If it comes back a little more, if it gets near 40-ish, then you're going to have some of these shale producers jump back in again because they know they can produce around that number. Not all, but some. But if you get away from the U.S., the Saudis have a really big tap over there, and they hate the Iranians. And we don't talk about it much, but they really hate the Iranians. And the Iranians need higher-priced oil to keep their budget balanced. And they're fighting the Iranians in Yemen, and they're fighting the Iranians in Syria, and they've had this spat going on in Lebanon. And the Saudis really want to stick it to them. So if they can keep prices low, it not only drives out the shale producers, it also hurts their nemesis over there. So there's a lot of that going on.
So also back in July of 2015, we talked about Greece, Puerto Rico. 7 months later, we're not even talking about this stuff anymore. What's really changed in the world that would keep us from talking about Greece and Puerto Rico? The other thing, and we're going to talk about this in the next break, interest rates. But I found it interesting when we talked about Portugal and Spain and all of these countries that the domino effect may occur if Greece defaulted on their debt, and I was looking at the interest rates on 10-year notes in those countries, and heck, they're as good as ours, if not better. So it's kind of like,
well,
I don't
get
this.
Well, that makes them the high interest rates in the European Union, because, of course, the European Central Bank has rates negative. And so those are considered high yield. But I'll tell you, Greece is still in play right now. I think they're closer than ever to defaulting yet again. And their big problem is we're staring at the tourist season. Who wants to go to an island that's overrun with refugees? It's not a big draw. And so they're going to have a very bad tourist season. It's going to lower the amount of hard dollars they get, and they're going to struggle to repay.
We're going to take a break with Rodney Johnson. He is the senior editor of Economy and Markets with the Dent Research Group. And when we come back, we're going to talk about consumer-driven economies, my favorite thing to talk about, and really what has occurred in Japan, what's happening in Europe, and what we're seeing happening in the United States. And we'll get into immigration matters as well, and then just the predictability of people. And it allows you to become a great investor when you see this stuff, but it just makes you more aware of what's happening in our world and in our economy and our own country. We'll be right back with Rodney Johnson. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, about 15 years ago, just a guess, I was at a demographic school that Rodney Johnson taught. And as I listened to this stuff, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is just so reasonable. I mean, it makes so much sense. And kept going back to the well for more and more and more. And it became sort of my pitch to people is that you got to understand where people are, especially in these economies, these big consumer-driven economies, because 70% of GDP in America is based on consumer spending. So predictability from, you know, the peak age when you're buying potato chips or fast food or university enrollments, real estate, people getting into retirement. I mean, it's all driven by the age and stage of life that people are at. And Rodney, people matter, especially in the United States, Europe, Japan, any of these consumer-driven economies. And I loved that school that used to teach. You quit teaching it, as far as I know. But if you fired it back up again, I would be there, because you taught us how central banks worked. You taught us how, you know, what people did at different ages and stages of life, the baby boomers. And I just thought I'd throw it out there to you and have you run with it just a few minutes on consumer-driven economies.
You know, you saw it 15 years ago, and I saw it, 21, 22 years ago, and just as stunned as you were, but it made all the sense in the world that, you know, we talk about what's going on in the economy. We get on this show here, and we talk about, you know, Greece and the Saudis and central banks and this and that. But you know what? I'm sitting here in my home tonight, and I'm going to get off this radio show, and I'm going to go downstairs and talk to my wife. And we're going to decide on how to spend money based on what's going on in our house.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff out there is important, but our house is most important. And everybody's that same way. You know, they might worry about what's going on with the Fed, but nobody thinks, gee, what's the Fed going to do before they go buy a car? They just need the dumb car. And if they've got kids, they need a bigger car. And if the kids are leaving the house, well, they need a smaller car. And so the point is, our ages and stages of lives as we're consumers drives how we spend. And the flip side is the most important, because that's where we are now, where I don't ask the Fed before I save money. That's all about what's going on with me. Our youngest is going to college this year. We'll be empty nesters. And we're in that phase where we're supposed to be putting down as much as we can, paying down debt, saving for retirement. And I don't really care if the Fed wants me to spend more money. I'm not going to do it because it doesn't fit my goals and my needs. And so if you can think of people in terms of waves of generations doing things, we go through the late 80s and 90s and even 2000s with the boomers spending like crazy to raise their kids, but then their kids are gone. About 2008, 2009, their kids were in college. College enrollment booms, college costs explode, but the boomers don't have to spend the money they did before. They're starting to pay down debts, saving more. And it's not that they're living badly. We never say that they spend a lot less. It's that they just plateau their spending, and they tend to use cash instead of credit. And borrowed money is what supercharges the economy. If you're only spending what you make, then yes, you're doing a good job for yourself, but the economy thrives when we all go borrow a bunch. And the boomers have pulled in that borrowing, and they just don't do it like they used to.
And peak birth rates in the United States occurred around 1960, 1961 from a boomer perspective, and we've had immigration, of course, that helps fill that in. And if you look at where we are today, according to the Government Accountability Office, Rodney, 9,300 Americans are going to turn 65 each day during 2016, and an estimated 11,400 will turn 65 years old each and every day all the way through the year 2029. So we have this wave of people that the kids are starting to leave the house and hopefully off the payroll. Hopefully your kids will be off the payroll in the next few years. And you're exactly right. They say, okay, yeah, we're making good money, but we're going to start saving. We're going to start paying down this mortgage, and we're going to get ready for retirement. And they may go out and buy, you know, something kind of nice for themselves. They might go on a nice vacation. Yeah, but that spending that you spend on your kids, from electricity bills to food to all the stuff that just happens in everyday life, just kind of gradually goes away. And if that isn't happening with the people that have the money, then that tends to be not very expansive. And I think that's the point, that over the next several years, we probably will continue to see sort of slow, slothy growth, if any, in the U.S. economy. And that's kind of the point of demographics, right?
Well, exactly. That's the point of applying demographics to the economy. We're where the academics of demographics and studying populations and people meets business, because everybody knows target market, right? You're not going to try and sell minivans to 20-year-old guys in the service. They want Camaros, and you're not going to try and sell Camaros to 30-year-old new parents. They may want one, but they know they got to buy the minivan. And so it's all matching the product to the market. If you can apply that in a real big sense, people need to spend more when they're young with kids. They take on a lot of debt to buy the house, to put the kids through school and buy all the stuff. Later on, they don't need as much, and the kids aren't yet old enough to spend a lot either because they're just young in the market. Then you go through these expansions and contractions in the greater economy. And we're in one of those contraction phases. That's why it's been kind of ugly for a while. Not a while, 7 years. And guess what? Europe is worse. Japan is the worst. Mm-hmm. And it proves itself out day after day over there.
Yeah, and they've had low interest rates for, what, 20 years, almost zero rates? So
25 years it's been low.
Wow.
And so now that they're negative, it's just, I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We've never seen this. Typically, when a population gets old like that, somebody else comes in and invades and takes them over and takes all their stuff.
Yeah.
And so we try not to do that anymore.
When you look at that, it's just mesmerizing. And whenever folks have said to me, well, rates are going to go up sometime soon, right? They're going to go up, and the Fed's going to raise rates. And nothing but rates have gone down since the Fed started raising interest rates. And I said, I don't know that they have to go up. And this was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. I said, look at Japan. I mean, Japan's been at near zero for 20-plus years, and in Europe kind of in the same boat now. So, yeah, I just think it's fascinating when you look at the newspaper, and it says, like I read something recently out of the Wall Street Journal that said student housing was starting to come out of favor, and no one could understand why. Well, if you just look at peak enrollments in universities that happened a few years ago, it made sense that people were building crazy because all these kids were in college. Well, now there's not as many that are entering college. And if you live in a college town like I do, you'd say, my gosh, we have more kids enrolled now than we've ever had enrolled. And that's true. But Indiana University can crank their enrollment standards up and down to sort of ebb and flow the number of students that they need. I wouldn't say that's the same case for some of the other colleges around. So, yeah, I just think it's fun when you read something, Rodney, and you can say, huh, well, I know why that's happening. I know why McDonald's is struggling at this, or I know why Harley is struggling selling these big hogs, because that market has flown the coop. Yeah, so
that's right. You feel pretty smart about that.
Yeah, but then I need to figure out a way to make money by knowing that information. So that's kind of, yeah. But real estate is one of the areas of that is pretty easy. You know, you look at this, this big young boom that's now coming, kind of the echo boom and the millennials and starter homes make sense. And the homes that the retired folks are going to move into, the ranches with big doorways and nice countertops and all that. You know, but these great big homes with 6 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms and, you know, a pool and all that, I mean, they're hard to sell. And they continue to be hard to sell all across the country. Hey, we're going to take another break. We have Rodney Johnson on the line for just one more segment. I wanted to have Rodney kind of put some deficits and debt into perspective. According to the Wall Street Journal, we've had the highest tax revenues ever from the in the U.S. Government right now, but we're still spending more than we're bringing in. We're going to talk about who's paying taxes and what that means to you. We're going to be back in just a second. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes, kind of the investment show. Rodney Johnson, senior editor of Economy and Markets. If you'd like to read their stuff, which is terrific, they send out a lot of pieces. I'm not sure how they actually crank out as much material as they do, but good stuff. It gets you thinking. I mean, Rodney wrote a piece back in August of 15 called Kids Cost, and that kind of sets up what we were talking about in the previous segment about how much money people spend on kids, like $245,000 over their lifetime for a kid born in 2013. And you can email us at cfci.us. We'll put you in contact with them. Or just Google Harry Dent, Rodney Johnson, Dent Research. You'll find them. They're out there, and they write some really good stuff. Hey, Rodney, let's talk about deficits and spending. Right now, I guess we're approaching like $19 trillion in national debt. That's not the entire story. I know you have taught us that you have to look at total debt. You have to look at debt with municipalities. You have to look at the debt of companies and banks and people. So when I look at the debt, most people say, oh, $19 trillion is $19 trillion. I have no idea what that really means. But there's more to the story than that, isn't there?
There really is. And the $19 trillion is what the government owes in terms of outstanding bonds. Now, they owe $4 trillion of that to the Federal Reserve, which basically gives it back to them. So that cuts you down to $15 trillion. And they owe another $6 trillion to Social Security and some other benefit things for, you know, armed forces and stuff. That gets you down to $9 trillion. And so pretty fast it sounds like, well, gee, that's not so bad. It's like, but that's not the bad part. See, the federal government has this thing, the printing press, that they can kind of swirl around a little bit. That's not the pain. The pain is really when you get lower down to states like Illinois, which is carrying over $100 billion in unfunded liability for its pensions, and nobody knows what's going to happen. The city of Chicago, along with its school district, is woefully underfunded in its pension to the tune of several billion dollars. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Detroit was fixed, I mean, with quotation marks, but the bonds that fixed it are trading at about 25 cents on the dollar because nobody thinks they're going to pay. And so what we've done is set up this system where we think we're going to be able to fund a lot of pensions for typically public employees because politicians negotiated this, you know, many years ago. And now when the bill comes through, there's no money, but we have to do the hard thing of actually balancing the books. And that's very, very difficult. And then you walk down to individuals who have to save for their own retirement, and they're facing a very difficult situation because, you know, who thinks that they have enough for retirement? And so all of a sudden, everybody wants to hold this money close. Well, if you hold it close, you're not going to spend it, and if you're not spending it, you're not growing the economy. It becomes very difficult. It's going to be a point where people have to pry the money from those that have it, and that's called higher taxes. There is no other way to do this because, believe me, they're not going to tell tens of millions of public retirees, you don't get your money. Doesn't happen that way.
According to our friend Mick Higley, he says that 77 million households pay no income taxes at all. That leaves just over 84 million households that do pay tax. But 20% of American households pay 87% of the taxes due. So I was doing some math last week and said, okay, basically if you have 84 million households and we owe $19 trillion of just government debt, the stuff you can see, and you kind of whittled it down from there, that's about $250,000 per tax-paying household. But then when you take it down to the 20% that pay most of it, it's over $500,000 that each of those households owe towards the national debt. Remember, this is we the people that owe this money. It's not, you know, we the whoever's are out there. So it's going to happen. And I've been cautioning people, Rodney, for a long time that the biggest untapped source of revenue are those retirement accounts, just what we've been working so hard to build up, trillions and trillions of dollars. And there will be schemes and ways and methods for them to get in there and get that money out quicker, at higher tax rates. Possibly means testing for Social Security. They already do it for Medicare. When you look at the landscape, what are some of the things that people should start to prepare for now just in case they do get their retirement accounts raided?
Well, I, you know, personally, and that's that's all I can tell people. I don't put money in IRAs anymore. And it's almost, you know, heresy to say that, but it's because I'm doing other things that I believe are going to be a safeguard against perhaps taxes or somebody managing that account for me. And so, you know, tax-free investments, municipal bonds, things like that, there are a lot of things people can do if they're really going to plan for this beyond just money in an IRA, which is usually a very good thing. I'm not against them at all. But I caution like you do. It's a stroke of a pen to say minimum required distributions mm-hmm. happen at 70.5. Why not 65.5?
And why not use the single life table, not the unified table? All of a sudden, your distributions are 30% more.
Exactly. And boy, that's going to move some taxes into the coffers of the U.S. government very, very quickly. And they don't have to, there's no law change there. It's just a regulation. They chose 70.5 the first time they could chose a different number. So I'm telling people, look, they're going to look around and they're going to look for rich people and they're going to decide you're rich. Because if you're worried about any of this, believe me, you got enough money that they'd like to have it.
Then you're rich. If you're worried about it, you're probably rich. Rodney Johnson's been our guest. He is the senior editor of Economy and Markets, a terrific guy, great family man, one of the smartest people that I know. I've learned so much from you, Rodney, over the years, and I appreciate it greatly that someone of your stature would take the time twice a year, I promise not to bug you more than twice a year, to be on the show and spread your magic. So thanks so much. I hope you have a great rest of the half of the year that I won't be talking to you probably, and then I'll see you again or talk to you again later this summer.
Always my pleasure, Dave.
Thanks, Rodney. We're going to take a break, guys. We're going to switch gears. We're going to have Dan and Tina Peterson join me in studio. They are now championing Lemonade Day. So again, if you are a parent, a grandparent, aunt, uncle, a friend of a young aspiring entrepreneur, nothing better than Lemonade Day to get them started. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk with Dan and Tina and see how they're doing and what's up with Lemonade Day, what you can do to get involved and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you enjoyed Rodney Johnson. He's terrific. You can always listen to the show Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, and on WGCLradio.com. He really is one of the smartest people that I know. He taught me so much about demographics, predictable spending patterns, and it's just made me feel smarter than I was before by knowing that information, and you will too. So check him out. You can Google him. You can cfci.us us, and we'll get you in contact with him. All right, folks, we're going to switch gears just a little bit. You know, I've talked about Lemonade Day for the last several years, and I was sort of championing the cause the first couple of years and then sort of handed that off the third year. And then this year, I would say the best champions of ever have joined us, and they're here now in the studio as Dan and Tina Peterson, and then Amy Swain joined us as well. And guys, first of all, thanks for getting me off the hook and doing it, because to do a good job isn't easy, and you have to actually work at this stuff. So thank you, first of all.
We have very big shoes to fill.
They're only about 10 and a half. They're not too not too bad. You work for a company that probably for here locally is known as the greatest entrepreneur that we've seen in our generation, Bill Cook.
I would agree.
And there's a lot of people out there who would love to be a Bill Cook, but it doesn't take a Bill Cook to be a successful entrepreneur. You can just be a sole proprietor. You can have a couple of employees.
Absolutely.
But
you've got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere, and small business is where it's at as far as the economy goes. And this program, to me, is such a wonderful program to get a young person just kind of excited about being their own boss, going through all the motions of becoming an entrepreneur, selling a product, making a profit, doing what's right with their money. And that's why I thought whenever I heard you guys were doing this, I thought, perfect. You guys are perfect for the job. So how did you get roped into it, Dan, Tina?
I think we volunteered.
They did.
We did.
You didn't get the old tap from Jeff Baldwin that just says, hey, you're it?
You know, we went to one of those events where they talk about, you know, tell the stories of kids and tell the impact of the event. And Dan and I looked at each other and said, maybe
all
we
right.
should do this.
Yeah, I know. I felt the same way. Let's talk about when Lemonade Day is. Amy, when is Lemonade Day?
It's Saturday, May 21st this year, all day long, whenever the kids decide to have their lemonade stands open.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
They're all over the town, and you can walk up and buy lemonade and talk to the kids about everything. And I think as far as an overview of the program, it would probably be helpful, Dan, for someone who doesn't know anything about Lemonade Day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic program for all the reasons you mentioned, and we will talk about. It's a free program for youth, obviously. They need to, the best thing that anybody can do if they're at all interested in learning more about it is to go to the website. It's got every piece of information you would need to learn about what to do and how to get engaged in it. So it's bloomington.lemonadeday.org. And we'll say that again multiple times, I'm sure. But, it's a free program. Companies, organizations sponsor the event, if you will, to help raise the money and offset the cost so that when they register, they get a backpack and all the supporting materials on how to develop their business plan for the lemonade stand, how to develop their product, how to find investors, because mm-hmm. you have to find an investor to help support the cause. All the information that's needed is there, and then attend events to that lead into it, which I'm sure Amy and others and Tina will mention as well to help get them ready.
So there are events. I attended a couple over mm-hmm. the years where they can come and learn about marketing and stand placement and product development, building the stand if they want to show up with materials and things like that. So talk about the process that people can go through. And I was at the mall last weekend kind
yes,
of helping
thank you
sign.
For
You're welcome. I enjoyed the heck out of it. Brought my son mm-hmm. with me. He was putting lemonade head temporary tattoos on kids, but it was fun. But I was telling the parents, hey, you can put as much or as little into this mm-hmm. as possible. I mean, obviously, the more you put in, the more you're going to get out. But, you know, don't let the process intimidate you. Get involved with the process. And then as you work through it, you're going to find you're going to keep wanting to do more and more and more. So talk a little bit about that process.
Okay, yeah. If, like Dan said, you can go online right now to bloomington.lemonadeday.org and register your child and yourself to participate in the program. And then we will contact you and get you the workbook and the backpack and t-shirts. And the workbook is a wonderfully colorful, fun, interactive book that has tips and tricks and kind of walks you through the lessons for being successful at Lemonade Day. And like you said, you can put as much or as little into it. There are tips and tricks. They have role-playing scenarios in the workbook. They also have field trips. Mm-hmm. So you have to go to the grocery store and kind of do maybe some comparison shopping to find the best price for your supplies so you can keep your expenses down so you can maximize your profit. So the kids learn those kinds of lessons. And like you said, they have to find an investor. A lot of times that's mom or dad, but sometimes it's someone else. Last year we had a business fraternity at IU that did their own fundraiser just to have funds to be able to loan to one of the Lemonade Day groups. So we're trying to get the community even more involved in that and maybe announce some of that later on in the year. But it's a wonderful process. The other thing that they can do is come to our interactive workshop on Saturday, April 2nd. We're going to hold that out at the Ivy Tech Center for the Life Sciences, and that's located at 501 North Profile Parkway on the west side of town. Mm-hmm. And children and their adult mentors will rotate through 7 different stations where they learn how to be successful. We go even beyond the workbook where we talk about building your stand, different ways you can do that, all the way from having one that's red and white striped that'll fold down into a suitcase, a carrying case, to just a card table with a tablecloth over it. It can be as elaborate or as simple as you want. And the kids that participate year after year, they start getting a little bit more extravagant in their stands, mm-hmm. and they can do themes. We've had a princess-themed stand. We've had a
Harry Potter themed,
zoo animals, a garden themed one. So the kids can really have a lot of fun and a lot of say in what their business looks like and what their product line is. So the product line, that can be fun too. So yeah. We'll talk about different Lemonade Day recipes and the ways you can go above and beyond with that too.
And all those dates will be on the website. Tina, we talked about the mentor. We haven't put much mm-hmm. emphasis on that. To me, that's one of the most important and fulfilling roles. Talk about the mentor and how a person could become a mentor.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I do think that is probably one of the true advantages of this program that maybe we don't talk about enough, is that opportunity for a young person to work with a parent or with their big brother or big sister or with someone at their church or with another individual in the community to really I think almost work as peers, right? They're mm-hmm. they're working together. They're starting a business together. We don't have that opportunity very often for young people to work that closely around something that's going to have the type of life lessons that you experience here. And I know, personally, I just get so excited about the spend some, save some, share some piece of it. And you look at the stats from last year, and you know, like they only spent 8% of the money they raised. You know, 56% was saved and 36% went to charity. That's pretty impressive that the kids have the opportunity to work with an adult and to think that thoughtfully about how they're going to spend their own money.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Pretty amazing stats from 2015. Again, she mentioned them briefly, but you have them right there in front of you.
Yeah, I was going to say that 36% that was shared, that's 36% of about $6,400 that was raised by all of the kids last year collectively throughout Monroe County.
That's pretty amazing. Dan, let's talk real quick about just what Tina was mentioning. Simple. You know, you create a product, you sell the, you market the product, you sell the product, you pay your investors back, you have a profit, and then it, this program teaches kids the responsible thing to do with money. And you, again, can spend some, you obviously want to save some, and then you want to share some. And I think it really, really, for everyone that I know that does it in the reverse order, like you obviously have here, you've seen it, people that give first before they spend and save, somehow magically have more money to spend and save. It just works that way. So this is a terrific program. It creates a terrific baseline for these kids and teaches them. You know, because they probably aren't, for the most part, always being taught these things at home. I wish I did a better job with my son. So sometimes things like this would prompt even what may seem like a very, quote, responsible household to push them to do something they should have been doing anyway.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it teaches or exposes these kids to all the right lessons, I think, in life that'll serve them both in the near term and the long term, and ultimately will make our community so much stronger. Because, and again, you're right, it's kids, it's not, they're learning it by doing, if you will. And it, I think they, it's so much more fun, and they, it's natural, and it's relevant to them. And it's different than reading about doing these types of things in a book or being taught it in a classroom. They're actually in it, and they're, it just, they just absorb it, and they have fun doing it, and it sticks with them. You can tell the kids that do it year after year when we go down and walk around the stands. You can tell how they've just absorbed so many of these qualities.
Better and better and better.
And not just the business qualities of making a better product or marketing their product better, but their ability to interact with you when you walk up. I mean, they're just engaged in what they're doing. They talk to you. They, you know, they enjoy telling their story and why they're doing it. It's just so much fun.
Which in that generation is somewhat lost in the texting and all that.
Yeah,
they don't actually verbally
communicate
anymore. And Tina, it's just fun to have a lemonade stand. What kid doesn't want to have a lemonade stand? So
what adult doesn't want to have a lemonade stand? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, exactly. So, guys, I appreciate you taking the time. One more time, the website. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Bloomington.lemonadeday.org.
Perfect. And he didn't even look down to get that. So, guys, thanks so much for doing this. Thank you so much, guys, Tina and Dan,
happy
for being the champions of Lemonade Day 2016. It's a great program. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show and preview what's coming up next week. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you've enjoyed the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Rodney Johnson, again, you can catch the show Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, and always on WGCLRadio.com. Thank you to Dan and Tina Peterson for championing what I think is a very, very important program of Lemonade Day. It's build a stand, spark a dream of entrepreneurship. So if you have a kid that you want to get off the video games and get them interaction, outside of their basement, get them involved. And like Dan was mentioning that I'd forgotten, one of the things that really teaches them how to do is talk to people, you know, get out and actually engage people and talk with them, look them in the eye, shake their hand correctly, you know, all those wonderful things. So it's a great program. We encourage people to go to bloomington.lemonadeday.org. And if you miss that, you can always get a hold of me some other time and we'll make it happen. Next week's show, Mary Beth Franklin, the senior editor, former senior editor of Kiplinger Magazine and the current contributing editor and national speaker for Investment News. She'll be my guest. She also wrote a killer quote, as you well know, for the back of our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, along with our friend Ed Slott. So Mary Beth has been writing a lot about Social Security planning, and what changes are coming with Social Security. And she's going to talk next week about the presidential election and each one of the candidates' view on Social Security, when you can take Social Security, when should you take Social Security, how does it coordinate with your other investments and income planning. So she'll be great. She's going to be on next week's show, and it's going to be so good that on spring break week, when everyone in the Monroe County is gone, we'll be replaying that show the week that I'm out as well. So looking forward to having Mary Beth. I actually talked with her this week, and she's fired up, and she's all over the place. She's a national speaker, getting paid big money and first class airline tickets now, so she's big time, and we're looking forward to having her on the show. And I'm always so grateful for these people that take the time out of their enormously busy schedules, like Rodney Johnson Day. That guy's busy. I mean, their last conference was in Toronto. They had something in Australia a few months ago. He's writing pieces all the time. You know, he's editing pieces for their newsletter, and yet they take the time to be part of the show. And it's because of relationships. We've had these relationships for years. They're just normal, everyday, great people, and they want to help. So whenever they have the time and it works out, they'll participate in the show. You know, we were talking, I don't know how much more time I have, just a few more minutes, but this whole demographic thing that we talked about, understanding the ages and stages of life and what people do at those stages, how they spend their money, it really is cool stuff. And if you look back at 1960 and you say the average person had their first child at 27, the second one at 29, that means that those people that were born in 1960 are about 56 years old now, and their kids are in their mid to upper 20s. So as people age, they change. But we have 19 more years of people, 10,000 a day, turning 65 in this country. So there's going to be a lot of interesting things happen, a lot of things that you could see that will happen. And then when it does happen, you'll be, and no one else knows why, you'll be ahead of the curve. So again, understand this stuff. You can check out Rodney's online as well. So, guys, we appreciate you so much for taking time and being part of the big show. Thank you for all the listeners that text me during the show that are either family or friends. I only had four, and my Uncle Tony's was by far the best. So, Tony, thank you. Thank you for that. And then, there's a lot of good stuff that happens behind the scenes. So, again, guys, thanks so much for being part of the show Saturday morning at 9. And always on WGCLRadio.com. We'll talk to you again next week as Mary Beth Franklin will join us live. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.